tears flooded her eyes. "Tell me," Lucky said, sliding to her knees on the floor and crossing her forearms on the mattress. "I met someone."
"When?"
"You were at rehearsal all day. I turned my back a minute and you take an arrow between the shoulder blades?"
"He's running lights. He's working with David."
"One of Leo's rats?" Daisy smiled at Lucky's use of theater lingo. "All right, so you met, and?"
"That's all," Daisy said. "God, I sound so stupid."
"Excuse me? You had to practically tie my shoes after I met Will." Daisy looked over at her friend. Lucky was blurred by tears, but smiling gently. Her fingers smoothed Daisy's hair. "Funny when it happens, isn't it?" Daisy shook her head.
"I don't know if I can talk about it." It was too fragile. A wad of tissue-fine papers she had to pick apart without tearing.
Lucky caressed her cheek, then leaned up and over and kissed it.
"It'll be all right.
It's like a fever. Take a couple of Tylenol and get some sleep."
"Sure,"
Daisy said, snorting, curling on her side toward the wall. She felt like jogging. She doubted she'd ever sleep again.
"Take a shower, take a Somnex. That's what my mother always says."
"I'll try it."
"Hell, if nothing else works, try masturbating."
"My advice, not my mother's." Daisy looked over her shoulder.
"I would if you'd go away already."
Lucky laughed.
"Night, honey. Love you."
"Love you," Daisy said, as the door softly shut.
"I love you,"
she thought, sliding the words like beads onto a brightly colored string. Abruptly, she rolled the other way, clicking her tongue. A dozen glances and 6 words exchanged, and she was making a necklace out of love. Her hand flicked the air as if to cut the string and send the beads rolling. She was being ridiculous. His soft brown eyes, legs in jeans, and a gold chain peeking out of his collar, the touch of his fingertips when he passed her a soda. And she put her mouth where his had been.
"As if we kissed."
His smile, his direct, expansive gaze on her, every cell in her body whispering, "You." She rolled over again, picked 3 beads and strung them.
"Who are you?"
"He's so your bitch." 6 days, Daisy said. "We met on a Sunday morning. We were together by Friday night." It sounds so cornball when I say it out loud. She lifted her shoulders and let them fall. "But we were together 3 years. Something happened in those 6 days. And I'd like to hear more about it," Rita said. "Next time." The session was wrapped up and put neatly away. Daisy pulled her hat over her ears as she stepped from under the awning of Rita's building. As she turned off 82nd Street, the wind came whipping down the canyon of Broadway, grabbed her breath like a purse snatcher, and ran. Eyes watering and teeth chattering, she pulled her collar up and sighed at the gray streetscape. Stripped of holiday decorations, New York in January was a weary debutante after the ball, tired and disappointed with nothing to look forward to. Daisy frowned at her watch. This wasn't her usual appointment slot, and it threw off her schedule. Not enough time to go home for a nap, and too early to be at the theater. She hated having time to kill. She'd get a cup of coffee somewhere, head over to the Met, and if a couch was free in the ladies' lounge, she'd close her eyes a bit. In a bakery, she ordered coffee and a chocolate croissant, sat down at a little table in the window. She had no book with her, but she had her music. She slipped her earphones on, and people watched, letting the brisk first movement of Mozart's clarinet concerto accompany the hustle outside. With a slower second movement, her mind pulled inward, and her eyes stopped seeing beyond the window. She advanced the CD to the next track, the Bach Prelude in C.
"C major,"
Eric said.
"The friendly is key."
She took a sip of coffee, swallowing as slowly as possible, letting the warmth soothe her throat. Eric passing her his soda, the calloused tips of his fingers, her mouth where his had been.
"As if we kissed."
6 days. 6 hexagon beads on a string. All day Sunday in the theater, no meaningful conversation, just a lot of exchanged curious glances and shared sips, and a feeling something was going on. Something that was beyond everything. Monday afternoon was the focus session, when lighting for the concert was designed and the instruments and lanterns set in place. The dancers mostly stood around,
talking, reading, knitting, dozing, while the stagehands were run ragged. Daisy pretended to read while her eyes followed Eric. He went from stage left to stage right and back again, climbed up to the catwalk or crawled beneath the stage. He disappeared on errands for a length of time, then reappeared up on a ladder, hauling, carrying, lifting, and heaving, far too occupied to be looking at girls. "Daisy, don't move or turn your head," Taylor Revelle murmured over her knitting. "But the gorgeous blonde stagehand can't take his eyes off you."
"He's been staring at her for 5 minutes," Manuel Sabena said. "I'm timing." "Matt Lombardi already sniffed him out," Will said. "Thinks he's the love child of Brian Adams and Sting."
Heart pounding hard, Daisy made her mouth into a vague smile. She counted to 10, then looked over at the wings. Eric quickly looked away.
5 minutes, 14 seconds, Manuel said, digging Daisy's side and showing her his watch. "He's so your bitch."
Daisy's eyes narrowed. Eric was holding the ladder, a foot on the bottom rung, and his arms braced. He pointed up, said something to his comrade, then put his forehead against his elbow, and his shoulders went up and down in a tired sigh. He turned his head and met Daisy's eyes. He smiled, and the fingers of one hand rose up in a tiny wave.
"Un régal pour l'oeil, yeah?" Will said, under his breath. "Easy on the eyes."
Later, while rehearsing the prelude, Daisy went into an arabesque, gazed over the fingers of her extended arm, and saw Eric in the wings. His eyes were easy on her as she hit the sweet spot of the pose and held the balance, suspended perfectly above the music, as if his gaze was supporting her. Then the music called, and she had to go, pulling back from his eyes and moving reluctantly into the next phase of the dance. At the end of rehearsal, she was sitting on the floor, untying her shoe ribbons, when Will came and crouched down by her.
"I had a nice chat with your little friend,"
he said, peeling the hair elastic out of his ponytail. She looked up at him, irritated. "You know, Will, I..."
He reached a finger and set it on her lips. "He talked me up in the wings. I went for a smoke he came with. Want to know what I think?"
"No," she said, untying the other shoe. He held still, balanced on the balls on his feet. Elbows on knees, fingers laced between, composed and patient. She knew his leg strength. He could squat there indefinitely. She sighed.
"Yes," she said. "I think he likes you."
He put his hand on her head.
"Furthermore, I think he watches and listens more than he talks, which means he's just like you."
Tuesday, she and Eric spent an hour alone in the empty theater before rehearsal. She sewed her shoe ribbons, and he surprised her by sitting down at the piano with some sheet music he found in the bench. She started warming up, accompanied by his playing, and they talked. Or rather, she asked him a lot of questions, and he didn't seem to mind answering. She learned his younger brother was deaf, and his mother was the musician. She taught piano for years before his father left them. Then she had to sell the piano and go to work. Daisy had a leg up on the piano, stretching out over it. She frowned against her knee. "Your father left you?" she said.
"Went out one night and never came back."
She picked up her head. He looked at her over the music stand, the tiniest bit of confusion in his expression, as if he couldn't believe what he just told her. She took her foot down. "How old were you?"
8.
"You haven't seen your father since you were 8? He shook his head, and she probed a little. "No word, no contact? No nothing?"
"Nothing."
Taken aback, she picked up the unfamiliar garment of his experience and tried it on. Clothed as she was in the strong, unwavering love of her own father, it was a poor fit. She squirmed and itched in it, trying to be 8 years old when the world is easiest understood in black and white, except when black and white becomes here and gone.
Overnight, with no explanation.
"Is he alive?" she asked.
"He didn't know."
Sitting straight and proud on the bench, he looked at her, letting her in through his eyes. She looked back, breathing him in. Her heart pulsed, dressed in his pain. They went on staring, caught up in the strange, delicate moment. "Look away," she thought. "You're freaking him out. Stop staring."
Neither moved.
"My real name's Byron," he said. He shook his head, smiling.
"Since I seem to be telling you everything."
"Does anyone call you Byron?" she asked, putting it with Eric and Fish. a trinity of identities attached to this boy.
Rarely, he said. It's his name, too, my father's.
Then he looked away. She told him her real name. It's French for Daisy. His chin went up and down in understanding. As his lips shaped Marguerite without a sound, she wanted to kiss him. I want to taste my name in your mouth, she thought. A fiery blush raced up her neck and into her face. She bent over her outstretched leg, hiding. Play the prelude again, she said. Wednesday night, after rehearsal, they went to the campus center for dinner. Daisy, Will, Lucky, David, and Eric, the embryonic stage of the circle. By the end of the night, it was Daisy and Eric alone in the booth. She had chapters to read. He had his cue sheets to finish. The work went undone because they couldn't stop talking, couldn't stop staring. His eyes were magnetic, attracting and trapping hers. They weren't aggressive like David's, or lined with confident self-awareness like Will's. They were gentle eyes, vulnerable and curious. And when she looked into them, she was filled with an indefinable sensation. It was greater than joy, more precise than peace. Not quite love, but close. She felt understood. He showed her his necklace, the gold chain she'd been admiring since Sunday. He unclasped it now and coiled it into her palm. It was warm from his skin. A handsome piece, square-linked and masculine with three small charms, a saint's medal engraved with an ancestor's initials.
She's Birgitta, he said, the patron saint of Sweden.
A goldfish and a flat-bottomed boat with Fiskara engraved on its bottom.
Fiskara means fisherman.
I thought it meant scissors, the ones with the orange handles.
He laughed. I get that all the time.
She asked if his father wore the necklace. Eric remembered playing with it when he was a little boy. He would sit on his father's lap and make up stories about Birgitta and her boat, catching the magic fish. He reached behind his neck to fasten the chain again, telling Daisy how his mother had met with his father one last time to sign divorce papers, and the father had given the gold chain over. Listening to him, Daisy put her hand out on the table. With no break in his words, Eric put his on it, curled his fingers around hers, and went on telling her things. He was only 10 when the divorce was finalized. It was more than 5 years later when his mother gave the chain to him to keep. But I had to be 16 about it, he said, now holding her hand in both of his. Under the table, their calves and ankles were hugging.
Prove he was no big deal to me.
He was everything to you, she thought, her palm warm between his. He was running his calloused fingertips along the edges of her nails. She looked at him, balancing on his gaze.
I like you, he said.
As she did over the lid of the piano yesterday, she reached invisible hands to try him on and found the warm jacket of his simplest self fit her perfectly. She pulled it close around her shoulders, drew her hair out from beneath its collar. I like you, she whispered, lost in his eyes. You fit me, she thought. Thursday was dress rehearsal. She was standing in the wings while the wardrobe tech sewed up the back seam of her dance dress when she saw Eric. She held her hands out to him, and he came to her, took her hands in his. They stood still, the hustling current of production parting and passing around them as their eyes held in a silent, staring communion. He reached shy fingers to play with her earring, then trailed them down her jaw, touching her like a lover. Her mind wrapped arms around the moment and slowly pulled it horizontal, drawing Eric's longing to lie down with hers. She felt it then, the ache of her negative space needing a positive to fill it, craving for the first time a closeness that conjoined, male and female. Away floated the last bits of adolescent revulsion toward the notion of a man being inside her body. Her thoughts became fists. They dug their nails into Eric's presence and held on with a quiet, greedy revelation. I want him. Friday was opening night, the night her life opened. I can't breathe. The dressing rooms lined the space beneath the stage, like catacombs. Beneath a low ceiling, the air was warm and dry, a little musty, layered with the smell of hairspray, makeup, sweaty costumes, and illicit cigarettes.
They weren't supposed to smoke down there, but everyone gathered around the one transom window that opened and did anyway. Because it was opening night, the strong scent of roses and carnations wafted down the row of dressing tables as the girls exchanged flowers and notes. Personal possessions and good luck charms crowded the formica. Pictures were tucked into the mirror frames, and trinkets were arranged in mystical, superstitious order. Wrapped in her mother's black shawl, Daisy sang softly to the music from someone's boombox while she made up her eyes. Among her cosmetics was a bud vase with two yellow roses, one from Will, one from Manuel. At her elbow was a tissue-wrapped package. Taylor knitted her a hat. Hey, Lucky's reflection appeared in her mirror. A little fish was swimming around your mailbox. Lucky reached over Daisy's shoulder to set something on the dressing table. But so was a shark named David. Daisy half-turned to look back at her, eyes wide. I don't trust him, Lucky said, smiling. So I went with my gut and brought it down. Thank you, Daisy said. She turned back to the table, heart spinning in circles like an eel. Eric left a bag of Swedish fish in her mailbox, two daisies taped to its top and a folded piece of paper beneath. Lucky slipped away as Daisy unfolded it. The note was short, only 10 words clustered in the center of the page. The library had a Swedish-English dictionary. Sax equals scissors. Maird. Lucky came back and set a paper cup of water on the counter. With a careful fingernail, she picked the tape off the daisy stems and put them into the cup while Daisy read the note again. Lucky pulled out the chair at the next table and sat. You got a nail file? Daisy gave her one, then tapped her eye pencil on the table, thinking. She waited until Lucky was engrossed in filing to speak.
Can I ask you a personal question?
No. You can buy me tampons at the drugstore and throw my dirty underwear in with your load of laundry, but no, you may not ask me any personal questions. Daisy smiled, loving her.
When did you have sex for the first time?
Actual intercourse? Daisy nodded.
Lucky put her hands down, fidgeting with the emery board.
I was 15, she said, and I didn't do it for love. I did it to piss my mother off.
Do you regret it?
Lucky rolled her lips in, nodding. A little. I got nothing out of it.
Who was he?
A boyfriend. Sort of. Don't get me wrong, he was a nice guy, but not the one who should have been my first. And I should have gotten pregnant, but I didn't, thank God. And by the way, since we're having this conversation and you have a funny look in your eye, I keep the condoms in my top drawer. Help yourself.
Thank you, I have my own.
When packing Daisy up for school, her mother had thrown a box of Trojans into the carton of drugstore supplies, right in with tampons and witch hazel. They went into Daisy's top drawer and hadn't seen the light of day since.
Lucky's nose wrinkled.
In case you haven't figured it out, I like to take care of the people I love. In case you haven't figured it out, I trust you. Lucky smiled at her.
What's going on, Daisy?
Everything. Daisy leaned toward her mirror, lining her eyes, cloaked in a mild confusion. She wasn't sure if Lucky gave the wrong answer or if she asked the wrong question.
You really like this guy?
I can't stop thinking about him, and I'm thinking about him in ways that I've never felt like this about a boy.
Like what?
She looked at Lucky. Put one foot on the trust, then the other.
Everything I like about him, she said. I want to feel inside me.
Lucky nodded.
You're smart.
Am I? I think too many girls jump into sex before they even know what they're feeling, or feeling anything at all, for fuck's sake. I have no shortage of feeling right now, Daisy said to her reflection. My thought is, you don't have to hoard your virginity until marriage, but it's not a thing to get rid of either. It's a gift, not only to him, but to yourself.
Daisy turned, pointing the eye pencil at her friend.
You're gifting him your history.
Exactly. No matter where you go or what you do, that guy is the first, and there's no erasing it. And that's what I could kick myself for. What's done is done.
I'm not going to die of regret, and I'm not trying to sound like I know everything about sex.
But the way it is with Will,
I'm telling you, Daisy, don't do it because you're in college and everyone else is doing it. Do it because it feels right. When it's the right person, Jesus, it's so fucking good.
Daisy nodded as she touched the two daisies on her table.
You'll know when you don't have any inner monologue going on in your head, Lucky said. The cloak of uncertainty fell from Daisy's shoulders. Nothing was wrong with waiting. And nothing was wrong with knowing it was time. Not wanting sex didn't require an apology. Neither did wanting it. Thanks, honey, she said. Lucky hugged her. Good luck. I mean, Maird. Will taught me you say Maird to a dancer. I'll teach you a few things to say to him. Which is why I love you. As Daisy warmed up at the backstage bars, her thoughts kept returning to the night in the campus center, when Eric unclasped his history from his neck and set it into her palm, let her hold it, let her touch some of the keen sadness that came with it, as if he stripped off the armor of adulthood and let her see the little abandoned boy within. Nothing could be done about it except to hold it in her hands and witness. I don't know what else to do, she thought. You let me touch some of the sadness you carry in your heart. Now your happiness is something I need. Slowly, she took her foot off the bar. She was filled with words piling on top of words. She went back to the dressing room, sat down, and turned Eric's note over to the blank side, reached for a pen. She'd never written a love note. It always seemed to her a foolish thing to empty yourself onto a piece of paper that could fall into the wrong hands. I don't do this, she thought. I don't bleed my feelings on paper to someone I barely know. She looked down at the white expanse behind Eric's words, hearing its plea to be filled with hers. I don't know what to do, she wrote, vulnerable and trembling. But the paper was kind to her thoughts. She saw herself between the words and lines. She trusted the blank space, trusted the little gift Eric had given her tonight, trusted the moments they shared so far and what he let her hold in her hands. She wanted more of it, wanted to hold all of it. I'm looking for you all the time, she wrote. She exhaled, breathing herself onto the paper. She dared to tell him he filled her head like a dream, not just his body, but his mind, his heart, and his pain. I want to talk to you about everything. She ate the candy and wrote until the stage manager called 15 minutes. She wrote a little more after the beret, arranging a circle of red gummy fish around the paper cup. She wrote after the prelude and the Siciliano, the words rolling through her head to her hand. I didn't know love would be like this. She stopped, pen poised over love. Too soon? What else would you call it? Her fingers traced over the lines she penned. They were in ink. They couldn't be erased. Either she gave him all of herself or nothing. No apologies, she thought. After curtain call, she was free to leave. She changed out of her costume, tidied the top of her dressing table. She would go back to her room, tell him in the note where she was, and ask him to find her, if he felt the same. She picked up the pen. If you don't feel the same, please be kind. But if you are thinking, me too, please come find me. Excitement pressed her, front and back, squeezing her lungs between. God, I can't breathe, she whispered. She hesitated before confiding this last secret. In a way, it was the most honest part of what she felt right now. And she told him, God, I can't breathe. She folded the paper, slid it and her heart back into the empty bag of Swedish fish, which was now an envelope, and placed it in Eric's mailbox, gave it one last caress. Please be kind. She went to her dorm, showered and put on sweats, called her mother, acted as if it were a normal night. She turned out the overhead light, leaving her reading lamp and the Christmas lights around the window. Her body was tired. The adrenaline of performance seeped out of her muscles, leaving them limp. She dozed until a knock at the door woke her. Slowly, she got up. No apologies. The cold came off his clothes. He was breathing hard and trying to quiet it. The color was high along his cheekbones, and she knew he ran the whole way. He came running to her. Me too, he whispered. Something under it. The skin of his face was cool, but his mouth was warm. He was shaking all over, as was she. His kiss was perfect. She touched his mouth, felt his breath catch against her fingers. He tasted like everything she wanted. He was beautiful, golden and tousled and trembling. She stroked the back of his neck, ran her lips over his head where the cold still clung.
I have so much to tell you.
He said, lie down with me, she said. Tell me everything.
Under the covers of her bed, still dressed, still shaking, they kissed and talked, falling asleep mid-sentence, woke again to pick up where they left off, kissing and talking until the thin hours of dawn.
I want to talk forever, she said.
He pushed up on his elbow and slid his hand into her hair, pulling her face to his.
You know what I want. I don't have to tell you. But I'll wait for it. I don't care how long. Whenever you're ready for me, I'll wait.
As the days gathered speed and collected into weeks, as they explored each other's hearts and bodies, he said it often.
I'll wait, Days. I'll wait for you.
He sighed, a circle of his arms tightening around her naked body. All of his skin lay along all of hers, and it wasn't close enough for her. Not anymore. It's the first time I understand how love can have a physical expression, she said. Because everything I like about you, I want to have inside me. I want to put it with mine and make it us.
God,
he said, running his hands down her bare back.
Exactly like that. I want to be inside you. I mean all of you. Inside, looking out.
He rolled her down, her head tucked in the crook of his elbow, and his other hand on her face as he kissed her. His kiss was soft and hard at the same time, deep in her mouth, yet hovering. The smell of his skin and the taste of his tongue, his palm sliding to curve around her breast, gliding down to draw her leg around his hip. She felt him hard against her stomach, hard for her, all the while his mouth and hands were so relaxed and meandering.
You feel so good,
he whispered.
You make me feel so good, and I want inside it, all of it around me.
I want it too, but I...
No buts. Stop.
His finger wormed between their mouths.
Stop kissing me. Listen. This is important.
Smiling so wide it hurt, she nestled her head into his chest, her hand running down the soft skin of his back.
Everything we've been doing, Days, it's not like it doesn't count. I don't think of it as a consolation prize or second best or something to make do with until we start having sex. If we're making each other come... Then it is sex. It's making love to me. All of it, even when we're lying around, just talking.
Even all my questions?
Especially those,
he said, against her neck.
You reached the tipping point with me. I mean, nobody has ever known me the way you do. And maybe, give me a second, I'm kind of figuring something out.
He rested back on the pillow and ran his hand through his hair, eyebrows furrowed. He was so beautiful then. So endearing and thoughtful, she wanted to throw herself into his experience, melt and meld into his body so she could work it out with him. I'm so happy right now, she said, caressing his face. He bent his head, rubbing his brow against the heel of her hand.
I'm trying to pay attention to it all, he said.
He put his mouth into her palm a moment.
I've never fallen in love before. I want to remember this.
His eyes flicked up to hers.
You know?
She ran her hand along his cheek. Her thumb glided across his lips, then along his cheekbone.
I know, she said.
I want to remember the falling.
I've never been anyone's first, and from what I hear, the first time isn't always such a great thing physically for girls. That kind of bothers me, or worries me. I just want it to be not perfect, but...
His hand cut a level line through the air over their heads.
I want something underneath it.
Build the bed first, before we get into it.
Yeah. I want you to trust me. Maybe that's why I like your questions so much. Answering them lets you know me, lets you trust I'll always give you the truth about myself. It means more to me right now than sex.
It's how I'm a virgin. And I'm as cautious about giving it up as you are giving me your physical experience. His smile flashed around a nervous laugh. His eyes grew wide.
Jesus. Sometimes I can't believe the shit that comes out of my mouth when I'm with you. Did any of that make sense?
Her heart was caught up in her throat, her eyes caught in his.
I love you, she said.
The smile faded. His fingertips came up to trace her face. They stared, peeled wide open to vulnerable bones.
I love you,
he said.
And I'll wait for you.
Then I'll wait for you too, she said.
Hungry for evolution. For 4 weeks, they built the bed beneath them, constructing a bower of intense exploration. Sometimes her questions made him blush or chuckle. Sometimes he hesitated before answering, self-conscious about the truth or struggling to find the right words. But he always answered, making her more and more hungry for the arc of his life. Running her hands over his body in the dark, she purred with curiosity, feeling him get hard against her body or in her hands. She was hungry for evolution, wanting to know all of Eric's journey through sexuality, how his body had woken up, started to respond to girls, the ways they would look or things they said and how he would get hard for them. She wanted to know how it came to be, from his experience of thinking about sex in the aching preteen dark of his room, all the way down the road to arrive at this place of being her lover. When was your first wet dream? She asked. He gave a bark of laughter.
Oh, God. 13? 13 or 14, sometime in there.
Did you know what it was?
I knew what they were as a concept, sure, but it's different when it actually... For a minute, you forget, and it's, what the fuck just happened?
But you were already jerking off by that point, I guess. He laughed again.
Well, that started in, like, 7th grade.
Light bulb moment?
Huge moment, kind of a sad moment, because any semblance of intelligence you've put together by that point is shot to hell. You get really stupid. All you think about is sex.
Really?
Pretty much, yeah, he said, laughing softly.
She loved his smile, loved the shape of it and the flash of his teeth within, loved how he lolled like a cat under her touch. She pushed up on her elbow, running her hand over his bare chest, hooking a fingertip under the gold chain at his neck. She picked up the tiny fish charm and set it in the hollow of his throat. Would you do it every night? She asked.
Well, not every night, but
his head bobbled around.
For a while, it becomes part of the shower routine.
She laughed. Convenient.
Easy cleanup.
What would you think about?
He shrugged. Girls.
Girls you knew?
Sometimes. Movie stars. If the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated was out, then it was always a hot month.
You don't mind me asking all these things?
As long as you don't mind dealing with the answers.
He took her hand and slid it against his erection, making her forget what she was going to ask next. Another night, in the dark of her room, Eric going down on her, his tongue like velvet, making her turn inside out. Her hand rested on the side of his face, feeling his mouth work with and against her, the roll and shift of his jaw, feeling how he made her come, her heart pounding blood like gold through her veins, and the Christmas twinkles blurring into an underwater galaxy. She dropped her hand on his head, holding him still, catching her breath. What do I taste like? His hand slid up her legs and curled around her hip bones, his cheek on her inner thigh. She could feel his eyelashes against her skin and the damp warmth of his breath.
So sweet,
he said. Really?
But not right away. It's tart in the beginning. The sweet comes after a few minutes.
Which do you like better?
Both,
he said.
I love when my tongue first touches you and you make this sound, and when it goes sweet. I love that too. And it kind of changes just before you come.
It does?
Yeah, like I can taste when you're going to come. I think I can, anyway. The shape of his smile became mischievous. You know, 6 seconds after meeting, I wanted to go down on you.
Shut up, she said, running fingers through his hair.
I swear, first time you got close to me and I smelled your skin, I thought, she's got to be so sweet. It was crazy. I'd never met a girl and immediately thought of doing that.
She smiled. I thought it was every guy's go-to.
Not mine, but I saw you and it's what I wanted.
Go-to, then? His low laughter soft and cool where she was warm and wet. His tongue slid against her, curled and coaxed. Her hand in his hair tightened. The lights around the window blurred again. More nights blurred together, more whispered questions blooming in their depths. What's the best part about getting head?
Everything, he said.
She'd gone down on boys before, but never with this kind of greedy ardor. She went for Eric with her passion ablaze, lay on her stomach between his legs, up close and personal as she undid his belt, worked the snap of his jeans through the buttonhole, and slowly tugged his zipper down. She didn't want to miss a thing. Not the heat of his skin, or the soapy musk smell of him under his clothes, or the line of soft brown hair extending down from his belly button and under the waist of his dark blue boxer shorts. How he dug in his heels and lifted up his hips as she worked shorts and jeans down his legs, the sharp inward tug of his breath, the clink of the charms on his necklace, as his head fell this way, then that, on the pillow.
God,
he said, as she ran her tongue along him. His body stopped and started, air caught up tight in his chest and his shoulders twisting down into the mattress.
Your mouth feels amazing,
he whispered. She pushed him along the boulevard of pleasure. He put his hands over his face, then pulled them back through his hair. They tumbled onto the covers, open and helpless as she pulled him over and over into the warm wet behind her teeth.
It'll make me come soon,
he whispered, his warning fingertips touching her forehead.
I know,
she said, taking his hand and gently pulling it down on the mattress. His voice was a keen blade slicing her name from the air one last time. Then his head fell back, his throat bared, the charms of his necklace sliding, the fingers of one hand gripping the sheets, the other hand curled into the dark as he came, and she caught him. After a minute, he reached down, took her under the arms, and dragged her up to him, folded her into his elbows, gasping and shaking.
I swear.
She put her fingertips on his lips. She was his everything at that moment, and she didn't want any more words. She wanted the tremble of his limbs and the choppy breaths that gradually grew smoother, the slight lifts of his head off her chest and the attempts to speak, only to put his head back down again. She held him, her tongue tingling, the skin of his bare back warm and gorgeous under her hands, his tight, hard body growing soft and still.
Us.
The night of her 18th birthday, Eric gave her a set of Russian nesting dolls, Matryoshka, which she lined up along the edge of her dresser. Fat, round sentinels watching as she gifted Eric to herself, to her history, to her life.
Are you nervous?
He asked. No, she said. Are you?
I can barely breathe, and I don't want it to hurt you. I'm not scared, but I'm shaking pretty bad here.
It made no sense. She should have been the one trembling with nerves. Instead, she was undressing with a calm, steady burn, a candle inside the bell jar of his love.
Even if it hurts, it's still ours, she whispered. I want you nervous. It tells me you care.
Her hands moved over his skin. As they kissed and touched, she felt the tremors in his body subside. Anxious or not, he was hard for her, bucking and straining as she unzipped him and helped him out of his clothes. Only the littlest hitch within his breathing gave him away. Then she was sitting on her bed, and he was kneeling between her calves, tearing open the foil of a condom. She took it from him. Show me how, she said. I'll be doing this a lot. Laughter in his breathing now, the smile she loved shining on her head as his hands guided hers.
Not much to it. Just leave a little bit at the top here, then roll it.
Can you still feel after it's on?
Don't worry about me. The less I feel, the better. I have no idea how long I'll be able to make this last.
I have nothing to go by, she said, lying back. Come inside me. As he crawled along her body, hard and intent, a wave of adrenaline splashed her chest. All at once, she wasn't quite so fearless. Not sure where to put her arms or legs, green and trembling in the shadow of his experience and needing him to partner her through this unfamiliar ballet.
Now I'm shaking, she said,
searching for his eyes, which had never led her wrong. His hand was so soft on her face, his gaze steady and strong, filled with tiny gold lights.
This is the best thing I've ever done,
he said. Show me.
Put your arms up around my neck. Hold on to me.
She wound her wrists behind his head. He dropped down on one elbow, kissing her, the other hand reaching confidently between them, and finding the way. He started to push into her, his hand now sliding under the small of her back, tilting her up to him.
Hold tight. I'll go slow.
She let her breath out and opened to him, fully expecting pain. He moved further up in her, and she felt it, thick and warm, filling her up. Her mouth fell apart at the sensation, stunned. She knew he fit her, but she had no idea he would fit her. She didn't know her body would give way like this, make room, and then cleave to him, letting him in deep. It was tight. It stretched her, but it didn't hurt. It was Eric inside her, and she made a noise she'd never made before in her life.
Oh my God,
she whispered. He drew back.
Is it hurting you?
She pulled him down and in.
No,
she said. No, it's good.
Is it?
He said, sliding his hands underneath her back.
Oh my God.
Her knees inched up his hips.
It feels so good.
It felt too good. As the blur of pleasure drew into solid, sharper focus for her, it began to crumble through Eric's hands. She arched up, and he moaned. She moved along with him, and he pressed her still, begging her not so fast, not so much. It was too much.
I can't hold on to it,
he said.
It's too close.
Go,
she finally said.
Just go. We have all night.
No, not yet.
Yes.
Tasting this new power of hers, she ran her mouth up his neck toward his ear and pushed him over the edge.
Let me see you come. Come in me, fill me up.
A stifled, strangled cry in his throat, and he was gone. He clutched at her and came, a writhing, grinding dervish, gripping her so hard the charms of his necklace dug into her skin. She clung to him, wrapping him in arms and legs, mouth open against his temple as he came down. His body shivered. He laughed a little. Then he lay still, shoulders rising and falling as his breathing smoothed out. He picked up his head and looked at her.
Don't cry,
he said. She touched her face, surprised at the tears.
I'm just happy, she said.
When he rolled off her, the condom was stained with blood. They both stared at it, a little confused.
You're not hurt?
He said. No, she said. Not at all. He went on staring curiously, then he dipped a finger inside her and wrote his name on her leg, in her blood. And she was his. The second time was longer, their bodies more relaxed, and afterward they fell asleep in a mess of limbs. The third time, in the wee hours before dawn, she rolled another condom on him and climbed on top.
Is this all right?
She said, and he nodded, eyes wide, hands coming up to cup her breasts and slide up and over her shoulders, down her arms.
You're so beautiful,
he said, palms spreading wide across her leg muscles. She slid her hand between their bodies and guided him inside, kept her hand there so she could feel him moving along her fingers.
I like this,
she said.
I like you under me.
Christ, I could look up at you forever.
He had a tight leash on his desire now. He sprawled on his back like a god, letting her have at him, taking the weight she leaned on him, watching as she tilted her hips this way and that, confident in her body and secure in his love. She experimented with how he felt and fit inside her, rising up or leaning back or curling down.
It's so good,
he said, his eyes full of the sunrise.
I knew it would be.
They made love for a long time, kissing, touching, and whispering as the windows filled with morning. She felt herself dissolve and melt into his body, felt her awareness flow back and forth between his body and hers.
It really is one,
she thought.
It's one.
It's all one. We are one. We are meant. We were born. I am him and he is me, and we are us.
I love you and me,
she said,
making us. I love us.
His hands reached up, plunged into her hair, and brought her down to kiss him.
I love us,
he whispered against her lips, over and over. He was beyond calculated, conscious thought. He was babbling, a sing-song of impassioned feeling filling her mouth and flooding her throat and chest.
I love you, Daze. I love it. I love us. I love you.
A house like this. Eric's house was a simple Cape Cod in one of the suburbs of Rochester, homey and cluttered with a netless basketball hoop over the garage door. The downstairs was wall-to-wall carpet, a luxury for Daisy, who grew up on wood floors. The kitchen was open and sunny, the heart of the house. A banquet table was built under the corner windows, and Daisy sat here with Eric and his brother while his mother cooked dinner. Christine Fiscara was honey blonde and olive-skinned, with Eric's brown eyes and a husky voice. She was tall and broad-shouldered. Besides being an accomplished pianist, she was also a competitive swimmer in high school. Peter was dark blonde as well, with blue eyes. Daisy thought Eric was guarded, but next to Peter's closed fist of a face, Eric was an open palm. Peter observed the world from a private and fortified fortress, and no amount of friendly overture could make him come down until he was good and ready. Daisy sat quietly and let him get used to her, all the while covertly watching him under her eyelashes. Pete was completely deaf in his left ear, and a hearing aid allowed a bit of sound into the right. He wore the device at school and soccer practice and chucked it off as soon as he came home, preferring to divine the world through his keen sight and the assistance of his guide dog, Drew.
He can pick shit up through his body, Eric said. Like a giant antenna, I'm not kidding. He can be in his room and still tell the difference between me walking down the hall and my mother walking down the hall. He says the house vibrates differently around us.
Christine made pulled pork for dinner, and her face was a mixture of pride and despair as she watched her boys eat sandwich after sandwich and bicker over the last handful of fries on the baking tray. She rarely called them by name. Eric was this one, and Peter was that one. Collectively, they were these two.
These two, she said to Daisy. Keeping them fed keeps me just above the poverty line. I grew up with four brothers, all football players, and I have no idea how my parents didn't go broke.
Your parents were broke, Eric said, spooning more coleslaw on his thrice-emptied plate.
This one, Christine said, grew 4 inches in eighth grade. If he wasn't eating or complaining about his sore knees, he was sleeping.
Weekends at 2 in the afternoon, I'd find him still in bed.
She took the empty bowl of slaw to the sink and ran water into it.
Eighth grade, Eric said, tapping the tines of his fork on his teeth. Yeah, I remember that year I really liked my sleep.
Christine continued talking over the running water. Without a break in eating, Pete nudged his brother's arm. Eric put down his fork to translate into sign language. You have 3 fears when you're a parent. Something's hurting them, or they're destroying something, or the worst, you don't know where they are. Whenever I found Eric in bed sleeping at 2 in the afternoon, I'd think, well, he's not hurting anything. Nobody's hurting him, and I know exactly where he is. And I'd shut the door and be happy.
Daisy was only half listening as she watched Eric's hands. She knew he was fluent in ASL. When asked, he'd shown her signs or how to fingerspell a word, mostly assorted curses, which were fun to learn. But she'd never seen him actively converse. Now she stared with bald fascination as he spoke and signed simultaneously, his strong fingers molding and shaping the air. It was more than a language, it was a highly skilled art form, this ability to listen to words and transpose into gesture, to interpret. He's dancing with his hands.
Christine finished talking, but Eric continued to sign. Pete's mouth cracked in silent laughter as he picked up and pegged a sandwich roll at his brother. Daisy stared, taking in the composition of Peter sitting with his guide dog on one side and Eric on the other, one who alerted him to sound and another who translated it. Eric was fending off Pete's punches with one hand and rapidly spelling with the other, and their silent connection reflected the kitchen light like sun glinting off a sword. They were bonded by steel, these brothers, an affinity made all the more stronger by its lack of noise. Pete looked over at Daisy with an eye roll and a palm-up sign with his thumb and index finger touching.
Asshole, she said. First sign Eric taught me.
A flash of wickedness lit up Pete's eyes. He signed something to Eric, finishing with what looked like the universal gesture for jerking off.
Milkshake, Daisy said.
It was the second. Christine clicked her tongue. Have you taught her any useful signs, Byron Eric?
No, ma'am.
Just all the curse words.
They're useful, Daisy said.
She looked at Pete, who seemed on the verge of saying something, but then his blue eyes ducked away shyly. He rarely spoke.
Doesn't want to, Eric told her once. He will if he has to, if he's upset or in danger, or even if he's super excited about something. But after my father left, he pretty much went electively mute.
Later on, Daisy was watching closed-captioned Late Night with the two brothers. Several times she put out a hand to pet Drew, Pete's beautiful golden retriever. The dog ignored her. After Letterman's monologue, Pete got up, yawning, and left, smacking one hand against Eric's raised one in farewell. Pete caught Daisy's eye, and over his brother's head, he made the sign for milkshake. Good night, Daisy said, and made the sign for asshole. Pete's smile flashed in the dark.
Night, Daisy, he said.
The voice was pitched high and scratchy from disuse, but the words were unmistakable. Eric turned his head in surprise as Pete headed up the stairs, the jingle of Drew's collar in his wake.
Damn, Eric said. That one never says goodnight to this one.
Eric went home with Daisy over spring break. The farm-to-market business was called Bianco's. The house itself was called La Tarasque, after a legendary dragon from the region of France where Joe Bianco was born. A stone replica of the creature squatted by the mailbox, where the private driveway branched off from the main road. Eric's eyes widened as they took in the sweeping vista of orchards and vineyards, the rolling green hills of Lancaster County spreading beyond. His eyes nearly bulged when, after dinner, Francine showed him to one of the bedrooms in the renovated carriage house, and Daisy tagged along with a pillow under her arm.
Where are you sleeping?
He said to her.
Here, with you.
Good night, darlings,
Francine said as she went down the stairs.
Sleep well.
I think my head just exploded, Eric said.
He and Daisy walked the orchards, apple blossoms falling like confetti into their hair. Eric helped Joe clear fallen branches, prune and tie the grapevines. He held baby chicks and ducklings in his careful hands, put his face to the tiny, fragrant pine trees dotting the acres, which, in a decade, would allow Bianco's to be a Christmas tree farm. And he ate a ton. Francine adored a good appetite. She was amused one morning when Eric picked a gold grapefruit out of the fruit bowl instead of the ruby reds Daisy and her father preferred.
I like things that are kind of bitter, he said, a little shyly.
You do?
Daisy said. Yeah. It's why I let tea steep for such a long time. I like when all the tannins come out and give it that edge.
Francine embarked on a feeding campaign. Salads with radicchio or endive or chicory. He devoured them. Homemade pasta with broccoli rabe, which Daisy detested. He ate 3 helpings. Joe had him try a well-aged Cabernet Sauvignon, one of the highest tannin red wines.
Wow,
Eric said. His face was thoughtful as he took another sip.
It's slippery in your mouth, but then bone dry after you swallow it.
Exactement,
Joe said.
Dark, unsweetened chocolate, however, was a bust. Eric screwed up his face and shook his head.
No, that's too much.
So interesting, Francine said. A sweet boy with a bitter palate.
You don't like sweets, now that I think about it, Daisy said, back in the carriage house.
Only yours, he said, sliding her out of her clothes, looking for his dessert.
Lucky drove down for the weekend. She had a horrible fight-laced week with her mother. Her eyes were circled, her curls drooped. Francine believed in the healing power of small, important tasks. Lucky was sent to gather eggs. She held the warm spheres to her cheek a moment before putting them carefully into her basket, her face absorbed and purposeful. She cut flowers for the table, folded the napkins, and sang to herself as she swept the back steps. After lunch, she and Francine made a cherry pie. As it baked, the kitchen smelled brown with pastry and almond, sweet sour with sugar and fruit. Check it out. Lucky's cheeks were pride pink as she set the bubbling lattice-topped dessert on the windowsill. A pie on the windowsill, she said. What is more all-American, I ask you? That night, the three friends built a fire on the patio and sat around the flames, eating pie. Eric played guitar, sloppy in an old plaid shirt and a backwards ball cap, his face shadowed with 3 days of beard growth. Every now and then he stopped to take a sip from the glass of Cabernet at his elbow. He moved his closed mouth around in dry appreciation, smiled at Daisy, and went back to playing. The girls talked and sang, wrapped in a quilt, her curls backlit by the flames. Lucky looked beautiful, at peace, reborn with a new nickname. Joe called her Lulu.
"This place is magical," she said. "It's so full of love and kindness and support. Your parents' days, I mean, they're...
It can't have been perfect. Tell me they tortured kittens in your presence or something." Daisy laughed. It was an observation she'd been experiencing since high school. Everyone wanted her parents to be theirs. She could either feel guilty about it or share them. She brought everyone home.
"Here?"
Eric said.
"No, your parents didn't move here until you graduated."
"Our old house in Gladwin," Daisy said, against her fingers. She'd found a pit in her cherry pie. She threw it into the fire. And even before, in the house in Fairmont, it was a stream of people coming in and out, and food. My parents are rabidly social, but they really don't go anywhere. They like people to come to them. Pop jokes that no dining room table is big enough for my mom. So I did as they did and brought my friends to me.
"You know what's funny?"
Eric said, firelight in his eyes as he smiled at her. "You call your father Dad when you're talking to him, but when you're talking about him to other people, you call him Pop."
"I know," Daisy said, laughing. "Like he has a personal name and an anecdotal name. I don't know why I do that."
"And you call your mother Mamu." "It was my first word, and it stuck. Just you, right?" Lucky said. "You're an only child?"
"Their only child," Daisy said. "Pop has a son in France."
"Really?"
Eric said, his fingers stopping mid-strum.
"Have you met him?"
"No. Pop got his girlfriend pregnant before he left France. I don't know all the details, whether he said he would marry her then or if she said she wanted to wait. He was planning to join the army because it was a fast track to citizenship and he could go to college on the GI Bill. Anyway, he went back to see her after he finished his tours and found she'd had the baby and married someone else. And I gather her attitude was, 'Move along, Joe, we'll pretend this never happened. Goodbye and good luck.'"
"Nice," Lucky said.
"He's turned the earth over to make a relationship, and been thwarted at pretty much every turn, passively by the mother and aggressively by the stepfather, so he did a little sidestepping and forged an alliance with the grandmother. She sneaks letters in, and sneaks pictures out. Pop has a couple in his study. I'll show you."
"And you grew up knowing this?" Lucky said. "It was out there in the open?"
Daisy nodded. "It was my job to dust pictures when I was little. 'Who's this?' I'd ask, and Mahmoud would say, 'That's Dad's son. He lives in France.'"
"Jesus," Lucky said.
"Something like that would be silenced in my house, stuffed under the bed or buried in the basement."
"What's his name?" Eric asked.
"Michel."
He smiled.
"Maybe he'll come here someday."
"He knows he can."
"I want a house like this," Lucky said, her shoulders rising and falling. "A house people feel safe coming to, where they can be themselves."
Netska.
"I wouldn't say my childhood was magical," Daisy said.
"Or perfect."
"Nobody gets out of childhood unscathed," Rita said. "But I certainly wouldn't trade it for anyone else's. I knew I had it good. Better than a lot of my friends. My parents are special people. I was treated as an adult at an early age. I wasn't left out of decisions. I wasn't sheltered from problems. I knew when money was tight or when Pop was having one of his episodes."
Rita's eyebrows raised.
"Episodes?"
"Something happened to him in Vietnam. It's one of the few things I was never privy to. Something he saw, or did, or had to do, and it involved children. He could not cope when a child was screaming. I don't mean crying. Crying babies don't bother him. It's the fine line between a cry and a shriek. A scream of genuine distress. My father goes pale. You can see the blood drain away from his face. And his eyes go to a place so far away, I don't know what happened there. And I'm not sure I want to know. Soldiers are no stranger to PTSD, Rita said. Unfortunately, the more generations you go back, the less it's talked about. He's a lovely man, Daisy said. I love him so much. But he needs to have things a certain way, and as soon as I was old enough to understand, my mom made sure I knew it.
What kind of things?
His personal things. My playroom could be a mess. The kitchen could be a mess. It didn't bother him. His office was sacrosanct space. Everything in his study at La Tarasque is alphabetized. Every knickknack, every book, every object is placed in a deliberate spot and cannot be moved. The rugs are aligned with the cracks in the floor. The fringe on the rug is flawless, not one piece longer or shorter than the other. He maintains it himself. The cleaning lady wouldn't dare go in there. It's the holy of holies.
Rita nodded. Traumatized soldiers are often painfully ritualistic, or painfully reckless, in the other extreme.
One time, I was about 5, maybe 6. I went into his office. He had a set of netsuke, little Japanese sculptures, tiny, exquisite things, carved out of wood or ivory, little people, little animals, little magic objects. Daisy's hands cupped, remembering their charm. They begged me to take them down from his shelves and play with them, and I took them out in the living room and had a ball. And then my father found me.
Oh, dear.